was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Sent lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Welcome, everyone, to episode 47 of the Matt Jones Podcast. I am Matt Jones here in Louisville after a couple of weeks vacation. I hope my plan was during that vacation to be able to have like a number of podcasts lined up, but it didn't get done before I left. So we actually had 2 weeks of silence. And then, of course, during those 2 weeks, all hell broke loose with the U of L scandal, Calipari and Rick Pitino going at each other and just sort of making it to where they both hated each other again, which was awesome. There was just a lot of stuff going on, and then I wasn't here to do any of it. But we're back, and we will discuss some of the goings-on during that period and more. My guest is going to be Joe Sonka, who you've heard before from InsideLouisville.com.
Insider Louisville?
Insider. I always get that wrong. InsiderLouisville.com, who I think does more of what journalists are supposed to do than any website. Like, you all actually do investigations and things that people don't do in other entities. So we're going to talk to him about a number of things that are going on. Also, tomorrow, just a little note, I will have Tony Vannetti on and Michael Waltrip, the NASCAR driver.
Wow.
Yes, Mikey's from Kentucky because I guess the race is at Kentucky Speedway coming up, and Mikey's going to come on and talk a little NASCAR. So we do politics / U of L scandal today, NASCAR tomorrow.
Good transition.
That's a good 1-2 punch. This edition of the Matt Jones Podcast is sponsored by Jack Irwin. Now, Jack Irwin, I've told you all, is the shoe company. They have nice shoes at prices you can afford. Everyone takes pride in finding a good pair of shoes. That's what this thing says, so I know it's true. Jack Irwin has some of the best looking and most well-constructed shoes on the market. So I have gotten two pairs of shoes. I have like these blue boat shoes, and then I got these brown dress shoes that you don't have to tie. You just put your feet into them. What do you call those?
Loafer?
I guess it's a loafer, but it's like a nice, like when I think loafer, I think like the thing I had when I was a kid and you put a penny inside of it and it wasn't nice. This is nice. Yeah. Like it's a high-end shoe. And the thing about Jack Irwin is the shoes are high-end, but they are affordable. So imagine you could go to New York, LA, buy top-end shoes, but then get them at prices that are affordable and you can get them delivered to you. That's what you have at Jack Irwin. Shoes of the quality they make cost 2 to 3 times more if you buy them in the store. So the shoes I have are like $400 shoes, but you get them for like $125. That's what you get at Jack Irwin. Simply designed, well-made, and well-priced men's shoes, handcrafted in Spain and Portugal. It's one of the things you know when you think shoes, you think Spain and Portugal. They're exactly right there. They're on the Iberian Peninsula together, right?
Exactly.
And we know our geography. So go now to www.jackirwin.com. That's E-R-W-I-N. jackirwin.com, and you get free expedited shipping if you use my promo code Matt. So jackirwin.com, promo code Matt, free shipping, jackirwin.com, promo code Matt. If you would like men's shoes, and women and ladies, if you're listening, you know the dude you date has terrible shoes. Get him shoes at jackirwin.com, promo code Matt for free shipping. So with that, without further ado, Joe Sonka, Insider Louisville, is here. Joe, a lot of stuff been going on, isn't it?
All hell has broken loose. Yeah.
It really has. And it's like across the board. And so here's what I want to do. I mean, I want to start by talking about the U of L stuff with you because you probably know more about it than anyone. What is going on, not so much on the basketball side, but on the university side. And then I want to talk a little bit about state government. We have a new governor who is doing a lot of stuff one way. I mean, whether or not you like what he's doing or not, he's doing a lot. And then also, of course, the presidential race is coming, and you have thoughts. You were an early believer that Trump would be the nominee. You're the first person that I heard actually say that, so I think you get some credibility here because you believed that.
Yeah, I was early. I thought he would be the favorite to win the nomination, and I a lot of polls are showing him down.
You don't believe it though, like you still think he could win, don't you?
I do. It's certainly less than 50% chance now that he's going to actually beat Hillary Clinton. But I would not totally rule it out. No,
I'm not going to totally rule it out. Yeah. But, well, we'll get there. Let's start with U of L. Okay. So while I was gone, it's Friday. I'm out on the golf course at the U.S. Open, and I get the message that the initial thing is President Ramsey's resigning, according to Matt Bevin. And then, like, 30 minutes later comes that he's also getting rid of the board of directors. But the Ramsey news comes first.
Right.
Now, you and I both, I think, agree that Ramsey needed to go. Is that fair to say?
Well, I cover this as my beat. I'm not the columnist of Insider Louisville. I'm the person there to give you the facts of what is happening.
Yes.
Where the different parties.
So you don't want to express an opinion.
No, I'm not going to express an opinion on whether. I'll leave that to everybody else.
Okay.
To whatever board.
All right. So let's. That, fair enough. Fair enough. That's a fair point. All right. So he explain in your words. Tell me if I'm wrong about this. The governor says Ramsey is going to resign upon the dissolution of the board. What exactly happened?
At his press conference, he said that I've had a good conversation with James Ramsey, and he's told me that he intends to resign. And that was, I think the second piece he mentioned. The first piece he mentioned was that he had basically abolished the University of Louisville Board of Trustees. So that didn't exist anymore. And he's like, also, like, as part of this, Ramsey's, you know, has told me that he's going to resign. Now, I'm not sure where you want to go from here, because this, from that point, it splinters out into about 30 different directions.
Yeah, and
on what exactly he's doing with the Board of Trustees, whether it's legal or not.
Well, let's start
whether
with
Ramsey
this.
Is going to actually resign or
the
not.
The Board of Trustees is, because a lot of people may not know this. Let's talk about how this comes about. The Board of Trustees are a group of people appointed by the governor.
Yes.
Of Kentucky.
And they serve terms.
And so they serve terms. So how long is a term on the Board of Trustees?
It varies. Some are 4 years. Some are shorter than that.
Okay. But. So the governor, whoever the sitting governor is, appoints on the Board of Trustees. And they do it for U of L. They do it for UK. Do they do it for Eastern and Western and
yeah,
all those?
Yeah. And they do it for the universities. And also, there are like 100 different state boards.
Yeah. You know, there's all kinds.
It's Kentucky, so the governor, retirement system. Yeah.
The governor of Kentucky has a lot of authority to appoint boards. Now, one of the things that's happened over the years is, and I'm going to give both sides of this. Okay, so side one is, our founding fathers, or at least our statute people, had created this system where boards will serve even after their governor has left.
Yes.
Okay, so in the federal government, with the exception of a couple of things like the FCC, generally speaking, when Obama leaves, Obama people will leave, generally speaking. Now, there are some boards like the FCC where you appoint somebody and they hang on.
Right.
But generally speaking, in the federal government, when the president leaves, his people leave with him.
Right.
And the new president appoints all of these people.
Right.
Kentucky has developed a different kind of system where we have all these boards where we intentionally stagger terms.
Yes.
So like the FCC, which is one board in the federal government, Joe, I think it's fair to say a lot of boards are like that in Kentucky.
Yes, a lot of boards are like that. And I think it's basically set up so one governor or one party doesn't have total control over a board.
And some of those boards require bipartisanship.
Yes, they require, some have to be racially diverse to meet the state. Some of them have to be diverse in terms of gender. It has to be equal between men and women. And others have to be proportional when it comes to political party affiliation. So there has to be, you know, 30, high 30s and Republicans and 50 whatever Democrats.
Yeah,
you know, something similar to that, or at least close to it.
And the theory, I think, behind why it's like that is that in Kentucky, and this was true all over the South, really, there was this notion of not wanting to have a powerful executive. The South has created most of their state governments under the notion that the legislature and the governor are almost equal.
Right.
Now, in other states, it's not like that. Like in New York, the governor is all powerful.
Right.
But in Kentucky, we've sort of had this notion, and I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's the notion that the legislature has a lot of authority. So that's why I think they've had these staggered terms. So you can be governor, and your boards can be mostly the guys from the other governor for your first couple years.
Yes, at least the first couple of years, so it would be that way. But if you're in term, if you're in office for the entire term, or
then
for
you
a
get
second
all
term,
your people.
Then eventually you're going to get all your people.
Exactly.
But it's just going to be a while.
So it's a check on executive power.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say. So Bevin decides to get rid of the entire board at U of L. And to be fair, he's done this now with many boards. He did it with he did it with the horse park. He's done it with the workers' comp stuff. And I want to get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the question of can he do it,
which is the motto basically right now of the
can
he do it?
Wait, before we get to the question of can he do it, in this case, he is doing it. We'll see if it holds up, but he's doing it.
Right.
And then Ramsey is resigning only after that happens. Am I correct?
Well, he says in his resignation letter or quasi-resignation letter to Bevin, which was the day before Bevin made this announcement, he said he would immediately resign upon legal restructure of the board.
Okay.
So
what does that mean?
Yes, that's the question. What does that mean? So if there's a lawsuit right now that's going through Franklin Circuit Court or appealed up to the Supreme Court, does that mean, well, it's not legal yet, so I'm going to stick around?
So right now, he's still the president.
Right now, he is still the president, not just of the university, but also the nonprofit University Legal Foundation.
Okay, which, and which, I want to get to that in a minute.
Which pays him handsomely.
But right now, he's still the president.
Yes.
And I believe Andy Beshear, the attorney general, has filed a lawsuit, correct?
Yes. He's intervening in a lawsuit that already exists in another board case. But
okay.
But he's including his challenge that Bevin's executive order on the U of L Board of Trustees is illegal, and also the Kentucky Retirement System Board, which he did basically the same kind of thing.
So they're essentially suing, saying Bevin couldn't do this.
Right.
All right, let's say they win that suit. Mm-hmm. Do we get the same? Does the old Board of Trustees come back?
Who wins, Beshear or Bevin?
Let's say Beshear wins.
If Beshear wins, then technically the old board would have to come back.
But can you do that? I mean, can Humpty Dumpty be put back together again?
I mean, let alone like win. Like if Beshear wins, that's going to be for a long time before he actually wins the case. So that might go into next year.
And their terms might have already expired.
Yeah, and their terms might have already expired. I don't know if you reset that. Like,
who knows?
It is odd.
All right. So right now Ramsey is still the president. Now here's how I look at this and say, I don't think anything has changed. Like, as of right now, you mentioned he's still the head of the foundation. Mm-hmm. What percentage of Ramsey's money comes from the foundation?
Oh, overwhelming. So,
80%?
In their last IRS filings, they said that they gave him $2.8 million just from the foundation. And his base salary, U of L, is just a fraction of that. I think it's around $400,000, maybe.
Okay. So, $2.4 million of his $2.8 million comes from the foundation.
No, just 2.8 was from the foundation. So that would be above 2.8, a 400,000.
Wow. So he makes over $3 million?
And the foundation people say that, well, you know, it wasn't all that year, but that's what they put
just
on
to
their
give
IRS
an example
file.
Though, 700 I mean Eli Capiluto just got a major raise to make $790,000.
Right. And the University of Kentucky Foundation does not pay anything like that. I'm not sure what they're
so what right doing. Now he still has the job where he makes $2.8 million and he still has the other job.
And he won't answer whether he's going to leave that job.
But okay, so now the governor doesn't have the ability to get rid of him in that job, does he?
No, he doesn't.
So he can stay in that job in theory.
Yeah, he could stay in that job. And
so in all honesty, after all of these moves, it looks like the only people that have lost their job
are the people challenging.
Were the people who challenged Ramsey?
Yes.
So am I cynical in saying that was this all just a plot to get rid of the board?
Well, I should say they aren't the only people that have left. Also, the people who have left are the people on the board who were the biggest cheerleaders and defenders of Ramsey.
Okay.
But they seem very happy with Bevin. They seem very happy with all of this. So either on the one hand, it was a fair trade to get rid of these board members that we don't like
But when I first heard it, I thought, well, I know some of those board members. I think they're good. But you know what? Maybe it is good for a clean start. Get rid of the board. Get rid of Ramsey. Let's all start anew.
Right.
But now I'm thinking they got rid of the board, but he ain't going nowhere.
Right. Well, you know, upon legal restructure, so if there's a big legal fight, then Ramsey, you know, would probably stick around through that. There's also the chance that once Bevin makes his new appointees, they're going to say, you know, we don't want your resignation.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. So that he could have a new board that just reappoints Ramsey as the president again.
Certainly, or Ramsey puts in his letter of resignation, and they say, well, we're not going to accept this. We need you. Like, you're
so really,
you are the bee's knees, and we need you to
keep you around. It looks to me like at its core, all Bevin did was just get rid of the board. The headline was Ramsey's going to resign.
Right.
But actually what happened, I mean, did I get the wool pulled over my eyes? When I read that, did I think, good for you, Matt Bevin, you're doing something I finally agree with, and it turns out that wasn't the case?
I think a lot of people felt that way when the announcement first came out. And, you know, what could happen? Like, we still don't know. In 2 weeks, Ramsey might actually resign. Once Bevin makes his new appointees, he might. I wouldn't expect it, though, especially when he released a statement last week which said, I have no intention to serve as University of Louisville president beyond the next academic year.
That's
May of 2017. Amazing.
And we have no notion that he will quit the foundation.
No, not at all.
And the foundation is where all the problems are.
Well, that's what the auditor is investigating right now. It's the governance structure between the foundation and the university. And so a lot of the reason why the auditor first got in under Adam Edlin, your buddy, and now Mike Hardeman continuing it, is that, you know, there was questions over, you know, the extremely large compensation that Ramsey was getting from the foundation. There were lots of questions involving the power that a president has as president of both roles, which is extremely rare among other universities.
It's almost totally rare, right?
Yeah, this doesn't exist in other universities.
I don't think people realize Ramsey makes more money than the other three biggest presidents in the ACC, which is North Carolina, Virginia, and Duke. By the way, three pretty good universities.
I think they're ranked a little higher.
North Carolina, Virginia, and Duke. Ramsey makes more money than all three of those combined. You combine the salaries of Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia, and Ramsey makes more money than that. That blows my mind. And so I see this and I think, Matt Bevin, I disagree with him on so many things, but you know what? He's doing this, and now I don't think he did it.
Right.
I don't know that he do anything?
Well, he got rid of the people complaining about him.
He got rid of the people. All right, now let me ask you this. This is what I'm hearing, and you tell me if this is correct. Okay. All right, Matt Bevin has this group of people. He goes to, what was the church? Southeast Christian? Is that right? Is that the church?
I'm not sure if he goes there.
You're not sure if he goes there.
Yeah.
But all of these people go there. Ramsey goes there, right? The three new board members, the interim board members,
right,
all go there.
Matt Bevin.
That's why I said Bevin. He
yeah.
goes there too,
yeah.
right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they all go there. Yeah. And then the woman that was just appointed highway safety commissioner or something, I think, goes there as well. Is he just appointing people that go to church with him?
And is a church service, is that a quorum for the board? I don't know.
That's a different question. But is he doing that? I mean, is University of Louisville now going to be like the University of Southeast Christian? I am baffled by the whole thing. I really am, because I mean, I want to say that I want to be careful, because I don't want people to think I'm just bashing the governor. Mm-hmm. Because much to your chagrin, there was a time I liked him, genuinely.
I mean, he has different sides to him.
He does.
You know? Yeah.
But I feel like Larry Webster, the columnist for the Herald Leader, said we're about to be living in Bevinstan, and I feel like it's becoming like Emperor Bevin, because he is just getting rid of everyone,
right,
and then appointing all these people that he like goes to church with.
Well, I think there are a lot of important issues in Kentucky over the next several years that are just going to be, it doesn't really matter what Bevin says, doesn't really matter what the General Assembly says. It's like, well, what will the court say? Can he do this?
So that gets to the question of, all right, so all these boards... Now, I want to explain this and try not to take a side in the explanation. And just, this is the fight in the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's take the workers' comp board.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I don't know, how many people are on it? 10? Hey, let's just say they're 10. And the statute says, here's how you pick the 10.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you get rid of the 10.
Mm-hmm. And there are 10.
All right, so there's 10.
Yeah, or I'm not sure if that's the exact number, but there's an exact number within
that says
the statute.
There are 10.
Right.
And what Bevin is doing is saying, I have the ability, okay, I can't get rid of these people individually. I'm just going to get rid of the workers' comp board and create a new board.
Yes. And the statute he cites is one that says, well, for greater efficiency and economy, I can totally restructure this board. And then when the General Assembly is not meeting,
yes,
and then
they can approve it.
The General Assembly can approve it. Or if not, then everything goes away and you go back to what it was.
And you go back to what it was, which,
yeah.
Now he's not, to be fair, the first governor to do this.
No.
Bashir did a lot,
mm-hmm,
a lot, but I think he's done it the most, like the most time. Like, he's doing it to every board.
Well, he's doing it to an increasing number of boards, and they're very – I think that the one of the differences, they're very important boards that are dealing with very important decisions. And the question is
like
whether –
pension board.
Yeah. The question is whether whether Bevin has the constitutional legal right to do this because this board needs greater efficiency, or is he using it just for as a power grab to get rid of people he doesn't want, to get all of his people?
Here's what
and
worries
that's,
me.
And I think that's going to be, one of, the main,
be the
one of the main legal questions, because even though Bashir did this a bunch of times, no one really legally challenged them. There was a Supreme Court case in the early 80s that kind of dealt with this statute, but there haven't really been any specific challenges
so we're
to this kind of action. And I think Judge Shepard has kind of, you know,
has noted that.
He has noted that no one's really.
So the Kentucky Supreme Court is going to decide.
Yeah.
Does the governor have the power to do this?
To do just about everything.
Yeah. And honestly, the Supreme Court will decide. This is where I think the average Kentuckian, a lot of people would probably go, why do I care about this? Here's why you'll care about it. If Bevin does this and it's found to be okay, then every governor is going to do this.
Yes.
Like, if this is found to be all right, every governor, the moment they get elected, is going to do this. Because why wouldn't you?
Why would you wait until your second term?
We used to think it was okay to have some members of the other side and your guys, and we all work together. Every governor is going to say now, every one of them, well, you know what? I'm appointing all my people. Bye-bye. So, hang on, just answer for you. So, because of that, you will essentially take – Kentucky was set up to have a moderately weak executive. Not weak, but not like all-powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And almost by fiat, if the Supreme Court decides this, we will have created an all-powerful governor. Almost by a snap of a finger. I mean, really, what worries me about this is not Bevin. Okay, I'm not a fan of Bevin. Many of you listening might be. But what if we elect someone you don't like? Right? Like, what if we elect, you know, if you're a fan of Bevin, what if we elect Allison Leonard and Grimes? Or right. What if you elect whatever? Part of what I think has made Kentucky a good governing state, for the most part, although it hadn't always been, is this idea that we didn't have this all-powerful executive. Well, these cases may decide that we do. Is that a fair reading of it?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. It's all going to be up to... I mean, ultimately, Supreme Court.
No matter
what the Franklin Circuit Court rules,
it doesn't matter,
it's going to get to the Supreme Court, and they're going to decide it. So
this is a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's a big deal beyond if I'm Matt Bevin's best friend. What he's doing, though, is setting it up to where every time we elect a governor, we are electing like an emperor. I mean, yeah. We really are.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have... You know, governors still don't have a strong veto power
on
General Assembly legislation because it just takes a majority to override. But in terms of, you know, controlling very important state boards, if he gets what he wants through this legal process right now, then that would be the case.
And so this is a big deal. I read the statutes. I was a dork, and I was on the plane, and I was reading the statutes. And
I've read a lot of statutes.
Yeah, I think it's a close call, honestly. I mean, I think the court, from a policy perspective, I think what Bevin's doing is really bad. But from a does he have the power to do it, I think it's close. I think there's an argument that he does.
I think a lot of it's going to be they're going to look at that statute specifically where it says for greater efficiency, greater economy. So if I think the judge is going to look into that and say, is this really efficiency and economy? Is this really needed, or do you just want to have power over this board? And you know that do you go by a case by case basis? How do you do that?
So, at the U of L board, there are these provisions that say if you want to get rid of a member, you have to do X, Y, and Z.
Yes, it has to go through a whole like appeals process.
Yeah,
hearing,
and it's a way to protect the members from being booted.
Right.
What Bevin said is, well, rather than getting rid of these members, if I just get rid of the whole board, then those provisions don't apply.
And make my new one. And this one, you know, instead of having 20 members, this one will have 13. Yeah.
And what would stop him, though? This is what worries me. All right, so the statute says there needs to be 20 members.
Yes.
Bevin is now saying I'm creating a new board and we're just going to have 13. Mm-hmm. What would keep him from saying we're going to have a new board, it's just going to be one?
And I mean, technically, nothing.
Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah.
if what he says is correct, then he could go, we're going to have one, and guess what? It'll be my wife.
Yeah.
He could.
Right. Like, now, the General Assembly wouldn't approve that the next year, probably.
Well, then
probably.
Then they put everybody back, and then when the General Assembly retires, he does it again.
Yeah.
He could.
Sure.
Like, the reading of this, if it's read the way he wants it, it makes it to where, honestly, all of these statutes, which for decades we followed, are meaningless.
Yeah, and Bevin has called it, I have absolute authority, like in his own words. So it's really a question of, are you going to give him absolute...
Is he trying to become Emperor Bevin?
I don't know, Emperor, King, or just, benevolent leader.
I would think... Okay, now this is something you'll know more about than I do. I would think if I'm the legislature, and I'm not just saying Democrats, but Republicans too, that there would be a sense of which you are taking our power for yourself. Does it matter?
I have not seen any Republican express that view. The only Republicans who have expressed their view publicly, you got Stivers and Hoover and a couple other members. They're totally supportive.
But those
they're
are
totally
all like Bevin's guys. Like Stivers and Hoover, and what's the dude's name from Scott County?
Thayer.
Thayer.
Yeah.
Like those three dudes are essentially like the three stooges of Bevin. Like, I say that. I actually don't mind those guys. I know them a little bit. I find Stivers to be a goober. But for the most part, the rest of them, I know who they're fine. But they are just like Matt Bevin's lapdogs, basically.
Well, I mean, I think he serves, their purposes,
But don't they think like he might lose?
Right.
Like Bevin's popularity is like 33%. So the next election he might lose and you might elect like.
Yeah, but that's giving politicians like enough, credit that they're going to, look towards the future. And like they're thinking of the now.
It's giving them credit to like think about, I don't know, the future of the state.
Yeah. They're politicians.
Let me put it like this. I think, like you mentioned Adam Eland, who I like a lot and who I bet you will run for governor at some point in his life. I like Adam a lot. I don't know if I would want Adam to have this power.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't know if I would want myself to have that power. Like, it's almost too much power.
Right.
And I don't think people realize, like, I don't care if you think Matt Bevin is brilliant. Mm-hmm. It ain't just about him. Mm-hmm. It's about the one that comes after him.
Right. And a lot of the people who have no problem with this right now, they're also the ones that call Obama a dictator for executive orders.
I mean, listen, I've said a lot on the radio. I think Obama did stuff with executive orders that he was not allowed to do. I think the courts were right to shut down his immigration order. I mean, from a policy perspective, I agreed with it, but he can't just do that himself. He cannot change, in my opinion, immigration law by going, I got a pen, I'm going to write it. We have a system where the legislature, even when they're acting like yokels, they still get a say. So I think Obama's been too all-powerful executive, but in Kentucky, we've never really had this.
Yeah.
And I am shocked that there hasn't been more outrage about it. I mean, the only outrage is coming from Andy Beshear, but that's hard to really give a lot of credibility to because he's mad because he's like mean to his dad it's different.
It's like a new Bevin versus Beshear.
Yeah, I mean, no offense to Andy Beshear, but I can't buy that he cares about the constitutional issue because his dad did a lot of the same stuff.
Right.
So how come there's nobody going, what the hell is wrong with all you people?
Well, Matt Jones.
Yeah, but nobody listens to me. I mean, so there's really no, but you're not hearing anyone in Frankfurt that thinks this is a big deal.
Well, not Republicans. I mean, there are plenty of Democrats.
But
that's the partisan.
See, I just think like that just sounds like partisan whatever. I mean,
right. I have not heard any prominent Republican come out and criticize any of these moves.
Let me ask you a question. Who in the Republican Party in Kentucky are the intellectual, decision makers? Like, who is deciding to do all of this? Is it Matt Bevin?
Like, who's the puppet master?
Who is the person? Because,
I mean, at this point.
Is it Matt Bevin?
At this point, sure. Because, I mean, he's the most powerful Republican.
But, I mean, does he have
state?
People that, like, he listens to? Or is it, like, him?
That's a good question. That's a good question that I'm not sure of. You know, Matt Bevin is a very strong-willed person.
Okay, and a bright person. I think he's bright.
A very strong-willed person. Someone call him stubborn. Someone call him strong-willed.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of this, like, he would be doing it on his own, you know, no matter what, even if he got some advice that was critical. But I'm sure he has plenty of advisors. His chief of staff is heavily involved in this. You know, he might be hearing from outside people and operatives who have been in government for a long time. But then again, you know, he came in as the outsider who was going to do things differently and change things up. So I think while he's probably getting a good deal of advice right now, I wouldn't be surprised if there were some areas where he was just like, I'm going to go on my own.
Do you think all of this is a play to be for him to be relevant nationally?
To be what? Like vice president to Trump?
No, I mean, I don't think he could do that. But like to maybe one day run for president?
Oh, I think maybe. I mean, this is a guy who the first thing he ran for was U.S. Senate. So he obviously, and he obviously has very, very strong views on national politics.
What do you think about the whole thing? All right, switch. So for people who don't know, like, it's hard because I know some listeners are like, think some of this stuff is boring, but it is important. Okay, so the thing with the Obamacare. So he comes out last week and says, during the election, he said he was going to get rid of.
Yeah, on day one.
On day one, we're getting rid of Obamacare. Right. He decided not to do that.
Right.
He decided that 500,000 Kentuckians losing health care, he wasn't going to be the guy that did that.
Right.
So now he's saying, all right, we're going to create this system with all of these exceptions. We're going to charge people some money, blah, 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 blah.
People can get locked out if they don't pay.
Yeah, it's complicated, but it's essentially like, we're going to make y'all pay some money. We're not going to give you vision and dental.
And you're going to have to jump through some hoops.
Yeah, jump through some hoops. I mean, look, none of it to me is terrible. It is what it is, okay? And he says, I'm going to go to the administration, the Obama administration, and ask for a waiver.
Right.
And if they don't approve it, then I'm taking all your all's health care.
Yes. And the question I asked him at that press conference, I said, well, what if the Health and Human Services, like, what if they like 90% of your waiver or 80% of your waiver? Uh-huh. Like, would you say no deal? And
what did he say to that?
And he said, well, you know, it's kind of still a negotiation process.
So he didn't say for certain.
So he said it outwardly. He said, well, still
he's open to negotiate. Okay.
So I don't know whether he will or not.
Do you think the administration will... Here's what I think will happen. You tell me. I think the administration will probably say, all right, some of this is okay, some of it's not, and then he caves and we do that. Is that what you think will happen?
Yeah, I think that's what will happen. Because the HHS, you know, that the day that Bevin released this, they mentioned that there are some aspects of the waiver which probably aren't going to fly. Like, they allowed Indiana to charge premiums for people on Medicaid. So I don't think there's anything with that that's going to be
I'm a bleeding heart. I don't think there's anything wrong with requiring a copay of a small amount of money. I do think you need to have a system in place because there are people who just can't do it. Mm. But the reality is we're going to end up paying for that anyway. Like,
we're not making any money off of that. Like, it costs more to be administrative.
It does, but I do believe in the notion. This is, I'm going to sound like a conservative here, but I do believe in the notion that there is a value in having skin in the game. Mm-hmm. That there is there is some value in that. I do think it makes people act more rationally if they have even the most minimal skin in the game. Do you disagree with that?
That it makes them more, probably. But at the same time, if you do that, I mean, even in Bevin's own estimates and his plan, like,
it costs
20,000 people are going to be dropped off.
Okay, but I wouldn't drop them off. I don't know what I would do, though.
But that's the thing. But if you're charging a premium
and people
and you
don't
pay it and you get locked out, then you've just lost your health insurance.
It's a tough call. But the reality is then we're back to the system we have without Obamacare, which is they can just go to the emergency room.
Mm, right.
I mean, the thing that people don't get when talking about Obamacare and not liking it, et cetera, is the government pays for all this stuff anyway. I mean, what people don't appreciate is if Obamacare didn't exist, the government still provides these people health care.
But it's more expensive.
It's more expensive, and it's just emergency room care. Like, we don't we don't in America shut people out of healthcare. Yeah. Which I'm glad.
Yeah, the ER doesn't say, no, you can't come
the
in
ER, here. ER is actually forbidden from saying you can't come in here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're paying for it either way. So at some point, to me, it's an efficiency argument. Like, what gives you the best results?
Yeah, yeah. You just want people to have health insurance and go to their regular doctor and get their checkups and not have to go to the ER when things are terrible. And then
the
costs go through the roof.
Yeah. Were you surprised that Bevin didn't just take it away like he said he would during the election?
A little bit, yeah. I figured he would come in and he would just repeal it. Now, it may just be a delay in that. Maybe the HHS doesn't go along with
everything.
Well, the way that Bevin was framing it last week was he's saying, like, well, it's on the shoulders of the HHS. Like, if they don't like this, then...
Yeah, but nobody's going to believe that. I mean,
politicians try a lot of things.
Yeah,
but
that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to say Matt Bevin took it away.
Because he has to file the executive order to repeal it.
Yeah, ultimately, he will sign that piece of paper.
His name will be on it. Yeah. So he can do that and repeal it and try to say it was HHS's fault. But he's the one that would sign it.
But you and I both agree they'll come to some kind of negotiation.
I would assume so. It's not going to be exactly what Bevin presented last week, but I would have to assume that they come to some kind of compromise. Yeah.
I will be honest. I, unlike a lot of Democrats, am not as anti some of those provisions as they are. The reality is, for the state of Kentucky, the success we had in implementing Kentucky Connect comes at a cost, which is in a few years we're going to have to pay for all that. Mm-hmm. And that's just a reality that we have to accept. Now, I'm not saying I'm against it, but when people act like there's not a cost that comes with it, starting in 2018, I think we have to pay 5%, and by 2021, we have to pay 10%.
Which is a much better deal than regular Medicaid.
Correct, but it's still a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of money for a state that's already over budget.
Right. But we're also an extremely poor state. Unhealthy state.
And there's no part of me that says we shouldn't do this. Right. I'm just saying to you, I am not opposed to the idea that people need some skin in the game. I'm really not. And I don't know why, honestly, liberals are as opposed to that.
Well, that depends on what you mean by skin in the game. If skin in the game means if you forgot to pay your $15 premium that month, you don't get health care for the rest of the year.
I don't know what you do with that. Maybe is there a way to deduct it from other government funds that come out? I don't know. I don't know. I would have to think about that because I do not believe it would be good to then kick them off of healthcare. Because again, in the end, you're just going to cost the state more money because they're just going to go to the ER.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I don't know. This is why things are hard.
Yes. It's not easy.
There was that poll that came out that said Bevin was only had 33% approval. Do you believe that's true? It was a weird poll because it was over the course of a few months.
Yeah, it was one poll and it was kind of a weird poll.
And it was a weird poll, yeah.
I mean, he certainly doesn't have a majority approval in the state. I would say it's somewhere between
40,
between 35 and early,
in now let's flip to 40s, the Democrats.
Yeah.
Democrats have been, I mean, when we launch our group.
Mm-hmm. When is that, by the way?
Probably early August. I mean, the thing is, we want to make it right when we do it, and so I don't think there's a rush to a particular date so much as, but I'm going to be the two of Adam and myself and Eric Jarbo, who's our executive director. I'm going to be the one that's the most critical of Democrats because really the Democrats are in no position to challenge Bevin on anything because they're kind of worthless right now. Is that fair to say?
Well, what would you say they're doing right now?
I don't know.
Well, I would assume, and you wouldn't see this publicly, but I assume they're working on the state House races.
Which are
very important in terms of, I mean, if you're a Democrat and you want to hold on to some degree of power, you have to maintain the House majority.
And I think they will, probably. It'll be very close, but I think they will. It'll probably be 51-49 or something.
It'll be close again. In 2014, many people were expecting them to lose it then, but they managed to. I think they gained one seat.
Yeah. It's weird because all those elections are so local. I mean, it's easy to talk about it, but people know those people.
And that's why Democrats, you know, they were able to hold on in 2014, because as much as the Republican Party tries to make every single race, no matter how small it is, when you know the people,
and part of what we're trying to do with the NKP is to say, look, let's find people in these areas who are not partisan, but are actually get stuff done. Mm-hmm. Because I do think it's important for us to have officials and elected officers in these states whose goal it is not to just win political games, but is actually to get stuff done. I'll give you an example. I really like John Tilley. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know he's a Democrat who Bevin appointed to be head of the Kentucky, what's the name of the organization?
Justice Cabinet.
He's the head of the Justice Cabinet.
And in the House, he did really good criminal justice reform.
I'm a big fan of John Tilley. John Tilley's a Democrat who decided he could work with a Republican governor and fix our criminal code. And they have now, John Tilley has created, Bevin got credit for it, but it was really John Tilley's group, a group of 20 people, Republicans, Democrats, judges, prosecutors, defense attorneys, and legislators to reform the Kentucky criminal code. Mm-hmm. It needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't care what side of the aisle we're on. Our criminal code is a mess. Mm-hmm. It's weird. Things are punished in weird ways. We send people to jail for probably too long for some things and too short for other things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. And so they're going to try to fix it. I'm for it. Kentucky needs more people like John Tilley, a guy who's a Democrat that's willing to go work in a Republican administration because he knows something needs to be fixed. That's what the NKP is going to be. Go find the young John Tilleys of the world on either side of the aisle and invest in them rather than investing in these stupid hacks on each side who exist only to fight with each other. Now, is that not something, Joe, people can get into?
I mean, the way you describe that, it sounds like people would get involved. It depends on – it's easier to say you're going to find solutions to bring people from other sides of the aisle. A lot of times, once you get into the ring, that's when the partisan arrows start flying at you. And we found that with us.
I mean, yeah. I'll be quite frank with you. When we started this, my goal – was to have a represent. We're going to have a representative in each county. Mm-hmm. And the goal was to try to find some, it was going to be mostly Democrats because we're Democrats, mm-hmm. but to also have Republicans in some of these places. And we will have a few, mm-hmm. but we won't have as many as I hoped because a lot of Republicans are scared too. They're like, Matt, I'm with you. You're right. But I can't have these guys on me. I can't have Matt Bevin giving retribution if I sign up with you.
Right.
So, I mean, we have people who are in the state legislature who've said...
Republicans. Oh, really?
I'm for this, mm-hmm. but I can't do it. Right. And I understand that. Like, right. I get it. But it's a little disheartening. But here's the thing. I think if we're successful, when people see the group we have, when they see what we're trying to do, it will be easier to get Republicans or at least have a secondary group that are friends of the NKP, even if they're not.
Right. Right.
I think that will, maybe I'm naive, but I do believe it. And I know, Joe, I know that in the general public, there's a yearning for this. I know there is.
There is, but I see the worst in partisan politics, which is why I predicted Trump.
You did. To be fair, you did. But I think the reason people like Trump, though, Joe, is because while his positions on some things drive me, I think, are awful, there is a sense he gives of being bigger than the party, of being like, you know, I mean, he's for Planned Parenthood. What Republican would have ever been for that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he takes positions that aren't totally always Republican, and I think people like that, right?
Right. Well, independent, you know, strong leader, doesn't care what anyone thinks.
He still leads Hillary on independence.
Racist
right
as hell.
Well, I mean, he says racist things. I hate to call someone a racist because I don't know the guy, but he says racist things. I think that's fair to say.
He's playing to racist fear.
Yes, I think that's totally fair. But leave Trump out of it for a second, because when you start talking about Trump, people get angry. I know that there is a yearning from people. I mean, these are the two most unpopular presidential candidates ever.
That's true.
Ever. There's a yearning for another way. And I don't think you can start a new party. People have said to me, are you going to make it a new? I don't think that works. I mean, I just don't think you can just have another party.
No, I mean, this is America.
You just can't. I mean, you'd like to, but you can't.
Right.
So I think you have to build it within a party structure.
Right. Not Ross Perot Reform Party.
Yeah, like, I just don't think it works. I mean, I wish it would. I'd love to have my own party, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think it works. But I do think, I mean, honestly, if I were elected to something, I'm not going to be listening to these folks. Mm-hmm. But that's because I'm stubborn. Are there more people like that?
But Americans are stubborn, too. So they like a fellow stubborn person.
So why don't more people do it?
Run independent?
No, but why don't more people run and just say a pox on both your houses? Why not?
Because you need the money of the party.
Yeah,
you need
money
of the donors.
But there are donors out there who I think would – I mean, this is going to be a test in some ways because that's what we're doing, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I think the money will be there. I mean, I do.
Because most people who donate, you know, whether it's millions of dollars to a super PAC or maximum donations or they help with fundraising – they're doing it for a very ideological purpose.
Correct.
Like, this is what I want.
And isn't good government not an ideological purpose?
Rarely do people get $5 million checks to a super PAC just for, you know.
Well, only if they feel like the other side is crazy.
Yeah, maybe if the other side is completely insane. But mostly it's, I want something from this.
Yeah, and that's a shame.
And I want
your office.
And you're
right. You're exactly right. That's exactly what ends up happening. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't mean for this to just become like a exposition on what we're trying to do. But I honestly believe, I mean, I use this example. I mean, people will hear me say this when we launch this. But there's a dude in Harlan County, okay, named Dan Mosley. All right, Dan Mosley's a county judge executive in Harlan County. And if you know anything about Harlan County, everybody's been indicted.
Yeah. Yes.
like every single person that got elected to office got indicted. Republican, Democrat, it didn't matter. If you got elected, you got indicted.
Anything from sheriff to county executive,
everything. Everyone gets
drug
indicted.
Trafficking. Whoops. Yeah.
So Dan Mosley's working at the bank in Harlan, which in Harlan's a great job, right? Like being vice president of a bank's a great job. Young guy, Harlan through and through, and says, you know what? I'm tired of looking at this county and being embarrassed when my officials keep getting indicted. Mm-hmm. And he goes and runs for office against the power structure in Harlan and runs and says, I'm just going to be I'm a young country mountain Democrat, but you know what? I'm not going to be a crook.
Right. I'm not a crook.
I'm literally just not a crook. There's no one in this state who could meet Dan Mosley and not love the dude. Mm-hmm. He runs, he wins. He completely, in the county judge executive's office, which in Kentucky is a powerful office. You're essentially mayor of the county.
Right.
He does an excellent job. He reforms that entire thing. Mm-hmm. And now he gets the most votes in the county because people know, like, we finally have somebody clean.
Who's not going to steal from us.
Exactly. Who's not going to just, because people don't want your state off. They don't want that.
Right.
So now he's the most popular person in Harlem. And he's young. He's younger than me. I think he's like 35 years old.
Harris is pretty popular there now.
Chris Harris in Pikeville is another perfect example of that. Ran against a power structure of corruption in Pikeville.
Democratic.
All Democrat corruption.
Absolutely.
He ran and won difficult primaries. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, he's a mountain lawyer who's a good dude. There are those people all over this state who want to get past the nonsense. And that's what we've got to find. We've got to make it to where Dan Mosley should be a state constitutional guy.
Right.
Dan Mosley and Chris Harris should be the ones running for governor and secretary. We shouldn't, you know what I mean?
I mean, how often does Kentucky get the good ones, though?
But that's what we want to do. Like, it shouldn't be you run because of who your parents are. Chris Harris and Dan Mosley, those are the people that should be in. And I know there are Republicans that are the same. Okay. I mean, I could give you some names. Guys like, I love Trey Grayson. That's a guy that I think had the right intentions in everything he did. The state will continue to be ridiculous unless we have people like that. I know you look at me like I'm the most naive person on the planet.
I mean,
what I believe.
It sounds great, and if it works, then it's going to be great for us.
You don't think it will work?
No, I didn't say that. I just said it's going to be something like that is going to be very difficult because there are people with a lot of money and a lot of power who it's in their interest to not have something like that, whether you're a Democrat or Republican.
I totally agree. Listen, I've gotten much more pushback from Democrats than Republicans. I mean, Republicans don't say anything to me. Mm-hmm. The only thing I hear from Republicans is I hear Republicans who go, Matt, you're right. Mm-hmm. The power structure of Republicans, Bevin has punched back at me some, but the rest of them really not. I've gotten much more pushback from Democrats who are, I think, worried.
We're saying, like, we're going to, you know.
I think they're worried.
We're going to lose our power. Like, we're going to win this election. And I think they're worried. Distracting.
Yeah. Exactly. That we're distracting from. Right. But here's what's sad. It's sad that it has to be a sports radio host. No, I mean that. Yeah. Like, I have to do this because they won't listen to Dan Mosley and Chris Harris. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they'll listen to Adam, and they'll listen to me, but they shouldn't have to listen to us. It shouldn't be a sports radio host that should have to do this, but that's where we live right now. Like,
I remember the 2014 Senate race, like, reporters could not get Alison Grimes. They couldn't get an interview with her. They couldn't get an interview with Mitch McConnell, and then they're like, oh, we'll come to Matt. We'll come to Matt, and we'll get an extensive hour-long interview where you're going through all these topics that we would love to talk with them about. But they went to you, so you got a certain cachet.
But I'm going to lose that. I mean, by doing this, like Matt Bevin was supposed to be on this podcast, and now he won't do it. I know I would be fair to him. Like I know I could sit here and be totally fair to him, but he won't do it, and now he has an excuse not to do it because Matt's in this and Matt's in, and so,
right.
So I've lost a little bit of that by doing it. I'm going to lose a little bit of my fan base, not a lot.
I don't think it's a lot because I mean you've got I would say a majority, definitely a majority conservative.
Yes, no doubt.
Yeah, but they still know.
I hope, cross my fingers. I think most of the people know that I'm at least coming from a good place, even if they disagree with me.
Right, right. And if you do say something about, you know, Democrats, something positive about Obama or something, espousing like a Democratic view, like they'll be the first one to comment on it because they're still listening to you, you know?
That's true. But here's what I've learned. Now, I do believe this. I've learned that people don't mind hearing you express ideas from the other side. Mm-hmm. So like people will hear me give the Democratic position, or not even, I don't like to use the word Democrat because it's not about the party. It's the more progressive position. Mm-hmm. What they don't like is then saying, vote for that person.
Right.
Right. So like I can say, I agree with Obama's ex, but saying, hey, you should like Obama. They ain't into that.
Right. Right.
And that's the key thing you have to I think differentiate a little bit.
Right. But you like
Obama.
You
look at me though like, well, I mean, I like, yes. I've not liked his executive orders. I think that really is an issue. But in general, I think he's been a competent president. Yes. I mean, when people say to me, he's been the worst president ever, I'm like, look through history a little bit.
Right.
I mean, you know, I think he's been a good president. I think people will wish he was still the president.
When he came into office in January of 2009, that's like about the worst position a president could be in.
And I also,
both economically and...
But with that said, I will say this. I do think he espouses an elitism that's a problem. Democrats nationally are elitist. They have become a cosmopolitan elitist party. Like an urban elitist party. Mm-hmm. And that's not good.
What's an example of an elitist?
I think he's very, well, he gives off a vibe of being a lot smarter than you are. And he knows it. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that. Like, I understand, like, I've been around a lot of people like that. Like, Bill Clinton is smarter than you. Not you specifically, but Bill Clinton's smarter than almost everybody. But he doesn't make you feel like you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. Obama does a little bit.
Right.
He does have a little bit of sort of, look, you don't get it.
Right.
And I think that turns off a lot of people in Congress. I think that's why Congress didn't like working with him. I mean, some of them just weren't going to deal with him no matter what.
McConnell
being one. But then there are some who are just like, you know, you don't have to always act like.
Right.
Do you disagree with me on that? I think he just gives off that vibe.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really hard to be the president of the United States and not give off the vibe that, you know, what I'm saying is correct, you know?
Okay,
it's, fair, it's not many presidents that get out there and say, but you know, this might be okay if you like it, you know?
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But there's still a way to do it. I don't feel that way when Bill Clinton talks. Right. I didn't feel that way when George W. Bush talks.
Like, so it's like an art.
There is an art.
The ability to be able to persuasively give an argument without being condescending.
Reagan and Clinton and John F. Kennedy are the three best communicators we've had since World War II. And they all had a way of talking that didn't make you think they thought you were stupid. Now, I don't think Obama's terrible about it, but I do think he does it. Mm. And I think that turns people off. I do.
Right.
But I do think he's been a positive president. But I don't hate people.
But that's the clip. That's the clip they use.
Let them use it. I mean, why can't people be honest?
Right. Right.
Like, why can't you say that and be honest? You can disagree with it. I mean,
right.
You know, my mother is my favorite person in the world. And her favorite president is George Herbert Walker Bush. It doesn't mean I don't love her or think she would be a great governor.
Right.
Like, why can't we just disagree? What is wrong with that?
Because moderate Republicans are a very small minority now. Like, you know, I mean,
I think they're more than you think. Again, I may be proven wrong in all this, but I know that listening to this podcast right now are a ton of people who believe that no one they see on TV represents them on both sides of the aisle. Mm. I know there's Democrats that think that, but I know there's Republicans that think it too. And I think they just want competence and honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll be proven wrong. We'll see. I mean, but I do believe that's out there. I do believe there are only a handful of Republicans in this state who would meet Dan Mosley and not say, I like him in office. Right. And he's a Democrat, and I don't think it matters to them.
Right.
I think there are very few people that would do that.
But I think that, you know, those same people, if they heard, like, you know, 2 weeks of attack ads saying that Dan Mosley is going to confiscate your gun, even though there's like, it's completely ridiculous and there's nothing behind it. Like, eventually the partisan politics gets involved.
See, there's your cynicism.
And people are manipulated into demonizing other people. And that really takes away from anyone's ability to have a rational discussion.
I think that's a very, very valid point. But I think you can only overcome it. By making people like Dan Mosley involved in,
you got to try.
Because what ends up happening is we run. Dan Mosley's gonna be like, "Why do you keep talking about me so much?" But we run the Dan Mosleys off. We make it to where they don't want to participate
because it's so toxic.
Yeah. So the only people that can handle it are people whose skin is made of steel.
Yeah, or they love the slop.
Yeah, exactly. And so we end up with people who are self-fulfilled. Like being awful people because it's the only people who will do this. And so at some point, I want to be the person, I'll take the arrows so that a Chris Harris or a Dan Mosley can succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let everybody get mad at me because we need more people like that. If we don't, this state is going to turn into Mississippi. It just is. And I hate that because I love this place, but it's going to. And, you know.
A lot of people like Mississippi, though.
I don't think anybody in Mississippi, though, thinks that they have a state economy that they want.
Right.
I don't think anybody in Mississippi is like, boy, we're just flying in money right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they like the culture of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I love the culture of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
But we are heading down a path of governance that's going to be a disaster for us. And the thing is, there are enough competent people in this state to turn it around. But they have to be supported. Maybe. All right, let me switch gears real quick.
Okay.
You still think Trump's going to win?
Well, I said last year that he had a 50-50 chance of being our next president, and I've held that 50% for a long time. Right now, I'd say like low to mid-40s.
That's still high.
It is still high because, I mean, you know, the polls that came out this weekend, like one had Clinton up 12 points. One had her up 5, but you had the third-party candidates in. It was like basically even. I still think there's a really good chance that it's going to be a close race. There are so many external factors that could play a role in this.
How does he win? Like, what is his? Because the map is so tough for him.
The map is tough
because
he needs.
She's going to win Florida. Like, there's no way she doesn't win Florida. It's too many Hispanics. She's up like 15 in Florida.
You know, I assume she wins Florida, but states like Pennsylvania, Ohio.
That's Michigan, how he wins, right?
Rust state Democrats, yeah. Rust state white people, basically.
No, no. You
want an incredibly high percentage of white people, white votes from the Rust Belt region.
He wins with working class white people. That's how he wins, right?
Well, I mean, he's obviously going to win with them. It's a question of how much.
No, I'm saying like for him to win. See, that's the group.
For him to win, he needs to win that by a crazy large margin.
And the problem is that's the group the Democratic Party has turned their back on.
How so?
Because what the Democratic Party nationally, not so much locally, because I think locally they've still tried with those folks, but nationally, they have forgotten that that group of individuals really has no one representing them. Because the Republicans economically are not on their side. Okay, they're free trade, they are, you know, don't raise the minimum wage, anti-union, so the Republicans are not for them. But Democrats, that used to be their base, okay? They used to be like, the idea that the number one thing you would worry about is the working man and woman, that make sure they had a living wage, that used to be the centerpiece of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Now the centerpiece of the Democratic Party, and I'm not saying these...
And that was the centerpiece in the late 60s until it got turned around. And, you know, Nixon and Republicans were able to use the backlash of the Civil Rights Movement.
No, you're talking about in the South, but in Kentucky, we still voted for Clinton.
I'm talking about the North. Like, that's how Nixon won in 68 in 72.
I understand, but even in the 80s, right. We had, you know, Union Democrats used to be a centerpiece of the party. Mm-hmm. Now, the party, and these shouldn't be mutually exclusive, like... gay rights, you know, minority rights, those two things can work hand in hand.
Right.
But the party is only focused on that side, I think, or the majority of. And that sort of Rust Belt Democrats, mm-hmm. I think, have gotten forgotten, and Trump speaks to them. Trump gets up and says, free trade and NAFTA have cost you jobs.
I don't know if they've been totally forgotten, but I do know this. If you're a Republican, if you're Donald Trump, and you talk about it in a way that you frame it in a way that they care more about the immigrants, they care more about protecting Muslims.
Yeah.
Like when you get into that kind of stuff, that's the tactic that he's using.
And that is the part where I wish
it's scapegoating.
Yes, exactly. Trump scapegoats. He says the problem for you all working class white people are Mexicans.
Right.
That's just false. Okay, that's objectively false. The problem is free trade, which, by the way, I'm not even necessarily against. Like, one of the things we have to accept is that the economy is just changing. Mm-hmm. And manufacturing is not going to be in America like it once was. Mm-hmm. But the reason is not Mexicans. The reason is the global economy.
And that's not Republicans' fault, you know, free trade. Like,
Democrats have been for it, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. But then what you have to do is reinvest in those workers in ways that has not happened. Mm-hmm. And that's the part. A perfect example is what Obama has done with coal. All right. You want to talk about stepping on a landmine? I'll step on a landmine. I'm from coal country. Mm-hmm. All right. Coal mines were the centerpiece of our economy for decades. Mm-hmm. And the average coal miner for a long time was a Democrat because Democrats represented coal miners, unions, Bloody Harlan. It was a Democratic place because we stood up for coal miners. Mm-hmm. All right. Obama comes, and it's not just Obama. A lot of Democrats have had this, and it's also the global economy. It's not just...
It's mostly the global economy.
But the principle is still the same. Mm-hmm. The idea that, all right, we need to clean up the environment with EPA, which I don't disagree with, mm-hmm. but there's got to be something to replace it. You can't just lose all these jobs and then move away. Mm-hmm. And what has happened is the combination of the global economy and the EPA, and it has made an impact. The EPA has made an impact. That combination has ruined the economy where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And nobody's done anything to replace it.
Right.
And well, that's what gets me, is that there's been no notion of these people supported your party for decades. And now all of a sudden, it's like they don't exist.
Right. Well, I mean, what is that money going to? Who's going to provide that money?
Well, like, the government. I think the government. You know what? I agree with Celis Wilder when he got up and said during the Senate race, he looked at a group of coal miners in Prestonsburg, and he said, "We as a society have taken a have taken a debt from you all. I mean, we have essentially taken your land, your working life,
your health,
and we owe it back to you to help provide a generation here. We just do. And the problem is the Republicans don't think like that, and the Democrats don't care about these people because they vote Republican. And a lot of them are religious, and they don't know what to think of religious people. And some of them, you know what, have some views that they think are backward. No, we don't like these people. So no one takes up for them. And that drives me insane.
But they're political footballs that can be played.
But they're not a football. Sides. They're just not. They're totally forgotten. They're Eastern Kentucky and West Virginia and Western Pennsylvania. Well, not so much Western Pennsylvania because it's still a swing state. But Eastern Kentucky and West Virginia are just totally. It's like they don't exist. West Virginia just had a flood where 24 people died and nobody even cares. Like, it's not even on the news.
Right.
And it's heartbreaking to me. But who's going to take up for them? Republicans aren't, because they don't want to give, you know, Republicans in government, they just want to talk about, we're pro-coal. But what are they doing for coal miners?
Well, they're going to...
What's Mitch McConnell done for a coal miner?
They're going to help build a highway extension and maybe, like, put a private prison there.
Yeah,
and,
well, but you know. I'm not against a private prison. At least it's jobs. At least it's something. I mean, what are the Democrats proposing that are as good? I mean, I'm Hal Rogers, I'm sure we disagree on a lot of stuff, but I will say this, Hal Rogers cares about those people. He does. Who else does?
Well, he needs to appropriate something
good.
Something amazing.
Somebody needs to.
Yeah.
Because nobody else does.
Well, are they going to get, you know.
I'm not saying a prison is the total solution, but give me something better, Democrats. Mm-hmm. Give me something. They don't, most Democrats, Joe, they don't even recognize that those people matter. And that drives me nuts because they were a cornerstone of a party for decades. And then now that they're not as important, you just forget them.
Right.
You still look at me with that cynical look like, right. You know, what?
Nothing. I mean, you know, they exist during election time. I mean, I think a large part of the messaging of both parties is still, maybe not Democrats, because they basically, if it's like a statewide federal election, then most Democrats would say, well, we're going to lose that. Let's do well in Lexington and Louisville.
Lyndon Johnson was, the Great Society was in large part about that area.
Sure.
Robert Kennedy ran for office and walked the hills of Appalachia.
Right.
Right. The Tennessee Valley Authority had a huge part in that area. Mm-hmm. Obama never stepped foot there.
Right.
Never.
Well, presidential candidates rarely go to anywhere that isn't a swing state.
But even as president, he has.
Right.
And that's disappointing to me. I have a friend who works up there, and she's heard me say that till she's probably like, I can't wait till we're out of office so they don't hear Matt saying, why won't he come to Eastern Kentucky? And you know what? Maybe his reception won't be great, but that you don't just do stuff because people like you.
It didn't go well for Hillary when she went to West
Virginia. You know what? Well, the Clintons only show up to win elections.
I mean, I've rarely seen them in Kentucky. When it's not their campaign or they're campaigning for someone.
There's a reason why Bernie Sanders won Eastern Kentucky. Because Bernie Sanders, the message he gave is exactly what I'm saying to some extent. And that's why he won.
He won because he wasn't Hillary.
I understand, but he still got 75% of the vote.
Right. Well, I mean, Hillary got even more than that in 2008.
That's true. You're going to get me worked up, and it's time to end this. Make a prediction for me. Who wins the presidential race?
Probably Hillary.
You're going to take Hillary.
Yeah. Right. But Joe, it'll be closer than people think.
Joe Sonka, at Joe Sonka, S-O-N-K-A.
That's right.
Insider Louisville. You've done really great work on the U of L stuff. I mean, I honestly believe if it wasn't for Insider Louisville, to a lot of extent, a lot of this stuff would have never come out. I think you all have done...
Well, he's still president anyway.
But I mean, I think people know what's going on in a way that they didn't before you all did it.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. The next one will be about NASCAR and Tony Vinetti. It'll be a much happier thing. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Send lawyers kinds of money. Oh!